This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
When I pull up to the parking lot, it's time to level up. Dial in, showing out for your team. Listen up, get you some. I stand the fan to give you what you need. Fan fuel, game time. Turn up the intensity. Team colors bleeding now. 5 hour energy. For a limited time, get the fan fuel flavor at 5hourenergy.com.
Hey, it's Mark Schler with the Stinking Truth Podcast. The NFL season is in full swing, and I'll be here to break down all the action like no one else can. Follow and listen to the Stinking Truth Podcast on your free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Stacey Dales, NFL Network correspondent.
Doing great. Good morning, everybody.
Breaking down the Bears beating news around the NFL.
What an absolute delight to be joined by the quarterback of the Chicago Bears. That is Caleb Williams. How has this thing been going for you, Caleb?
Yeah, it's been really fun.
Former WNBA star.
And the ball stolen away. Didn't see her coming, and Perkins gets the clean steal. Over to Dales, easy land. Stacey Dales off a beautiful feed from Elaine Powell.
Stacey Dales with Mully and Haw.
And I live in Chicago, and I do the Score radio, a little plug there.
Sure.
Every week.
670.
Shout out to the host.
This has been an emotional freaking roller coaster, you guys.
On 670 The Score.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Ruthie Polinsky in this morning for David. And we are delighted to welcome in our friend Stacey Dales. She joins us on the Aturo Hotline, your all-weather tire, Aturo.com. Stacey, good morning. How are you?
Hi, Stacey.
Good morning. Hey, guys. Good to be with you. I'm doing well. It's week 15 and feeling the grind of it all.
Oh, I bet. But you got a real good one. You're going to be on the Bills-Lions. That should be a heck of a game. And I mean, a lot of people think maybe a preview of the Super Bowl. Let's hope Dan Campbell doesn't go for it on fourth down every time. No, I'm just joking. But, you know, I mean, this is a big game really for the Bills because they can't afford to fall behind any farther from the Chiefs, right? They're in terms of home field and all that. So it's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, it's a huge game, obviously. Yeah. I mean, I think everything moving forward, even like for the Vikings this weekend, they can clinch a playoff berth, and they have three remaining divisional games. So this game against the Bears is, I'll use the word massive for the Minnesota Vikings. So you're going to see their best effort against what we saw in this Bears team. And then this weekend, I mean, every game I was saying to Dustin when I jumped on here, like, I'm going to be going to games where the seating matters.
Right.
You know, I'm going to be on the sidelines for Christmas Day with the Steelers and the Chiefs and on Netflix. And that game is going to be massive because of the seating, you know, the direction the seedings go at the top. Right now in the AFC, you've got Kansas City at 12-1. And then Buffalo sitting there at 10-3. And the Steelers are 10-3. So, you know, and then Detroit, you know, the interesting thing with Detroit is the Vikings are just a game behind them. So, you know, the Lions are sitting there at 12-1. You've got the Vikings at 11-2. And so the Vikings are just a game back in the NFC North. I mean, this thing is nuts. And all these games left are going to be so critical. And so, shoot, the Bears are going to get another just very difficult game that, you know, as we saw, you know, never count the Niners out, right?
Stacey, we talked all last week about this Thomas Brown boost that we were expecting to see and the interim coach boost, and everyone has the energy and everyone's smiling and everything's better now, right? Well, it didn't look that way on Sunday in San Francisco. What do you make of the way that the Bears came out in that game in San Francisco, and how can there be any sort of positive trajectory for this football team moving forward?
Yeah, just to be very frank, Ruthie, I mean, it was obviously very difficult to watch if you are a Bears fan. They made the 49ers look like you know, they're going back to the Super Bowl this year. I mean, Brock Purdy was 20 of 25. He had 145 passer rating in that game. It was the biggest disappointment that we've seen this year from the defense. Despite all of the shortcomings at the end of games, and you can say, well, that's coaching, they looked completely unprepared for a Niners team that throws the ball into space. I mean, George Kittle looked like the All-Pro that we've remembered him his entire career. So it was hard to watch for those that are Bears fans to see George Kittle. He had six targets, guys, and he had 151 yards. I really like Eric Washington, and I just think that it's hard to make changes in week 14 to your entire coaching staff. You had a brand new offensive coordinator. You had a brand new head coach. Your play caller stayed the same. You had a brand new defensive coordinator. And, you know, players get used to certain ways things are done. And whatever you guys want to say and whatever people on the outside want to say, Matt Eberflus is a hell of a defensive play caller. He is. And, you know, maybe struggled with some situational things down the stretch, obviously, and that's why he's no longer a part of this team. But it looked like a brand new team starting in week one on the defensive side of the ball. My takeaway for Caleb Williams over the last three games, you know, he's rocking a 100-plus passer rating and seven passing touchdowns to no picks. I mean, so, you know, it's kind of interesting, you guys, because I would like to see him throw a couple picks.
Right.
Yeah.
Because then I feel like Caleb is starting to see things his way and, you know, maybe learn from a couple of those picks that he should be throwing, but he's not. I mean, he's gone seven straight without throwing an interception, which is great, but
you're losing.
You know, you're still looking right. to see things from him and see that, you know, that fourth quarter Caleb come out throughout the course of four quarters and really in the first where they haven't scored points.
This segment with Stacey Dales is brought to you by McGrath Acura in Westmount. When you do the math, you'll choose McGrath. And Stacey, I think that's well said. And I agree with you. I think it's unfair to Eric Washington to think that he can step in and be the same kind of play caller. I mean, say what you want about Matt Eberflus. He was an elite play caller in terms of his defensive ability, in terms of his coordinator kind of status, play caller status. And I think that what you saw was an elite play caller on offense in Kyle Shanahan, and you saw a team that scored touchdowns instead of taking field goals. When they got to the red zone, they put the ball in the end zone, and that's what Eberflus was preventing all year long, and it's one of the reasons the Bears were in close games. And it's just hard when they're scoring touchdowns to feel like there's a chance. And, you know, so instead of being 16 down like they were the week before, they're 24 down, and it felt like they were 50 down because there was no path back into that game. And that's not blaming Eric Washington, but that's you know, I this idea that you get the new coach bump doesn't take into account how you were actually playing and what you needed to have happen to stay close in those games. So I worry going into Minnesota that, you know, Kevin O'Connell's a good play caller. You know, obviously we know Flores is an elite guy as a defensive guy. And you're going to throw all sorts of different looks and different things at him. And who knows? Like the Bears managed to keep Justin Jefferson from going off. And it was, you know, Jordan Addison and especially Aaron Jones that killed him. What makes you feel like that's going to not happen again? There's just not a lot of feel good going into this Monday night game.
Yeah, I mean, there's not, and it's because of the urgency, number one, that the Vikings are going to play with to secure their playoff spot. Molly, all your points are extremely well heard and on point. I mean, Jordan Addison is leading their team, I believe, in receiving touchdowns, and Justin Jefferson didn't have as masterful a game as he loves to have against the Bears, a game that I was at a couple weeks ago. So, you know, in front of their crowd, you know, just the emotions of just beating Kirk Cousins, who they played with for so long, and the playoff implications, and the fact that they're not far behind the Lions in this division makes this game really important. But, you know, I got the sense watching the Bears this Sunday, this past Sunday, that, you know, they're a team that, it's always concerning when you hear lose, you know, Thomas Brown is he's a really good leader. And so I think they're going to come out and fight still, but, you know, I think there's something maybe in the back of their minds, and I don't want to speak for them, is like, okay, we're all going to be looking at different situations next year. Mm. And when you're a player in those settings, whether you think you're staying as a Bear or you're going to be, moved elsewhere or decide to move elsewhere, like just in my experience playing basketball, I was on really bad teams in the pros. And at a certain point, are you going through the motions? I had to check myself a couple times, and I'm a captain on my team. Like, I had to check myself when I walked in the building because, you know, your record is so porous that it's embarrassing, and the performance, like, your ego gets into play here. Like make no mistake about it. Your ego steps into every NFL field, and like what you put on tape matters. And so what we saw in the first half, like, shoot, the Niners are going back to the Super Bowl. That's the team that I just saw.
Yeah.
Like, and they got banged up in every spot. So I think it's going to be really upon Thomas Brown to ensure that this group stays together. I go back to, like, Derek Carr, you guys, in his rookie season in 2002 was sacked 76 times. 76 times. So what's been exposed to me, the work needs to be done in the trenches if you're the Bears. If this regime is here next year, which I think it will be, like, when I look at the two aforementioned teams at the top of the division right now, which is the Vikings and the Lions. The Lions have 3 second-round offensive line starters. They have a first-round offensive line starter. That's the Vikings. The Lions have 4 first-round starting offensive linemen. They have a third-rounder starting for them, I believe it is. And their backup, like the guy that fills in, is Dan Skipper, who, you know, he's been playing left tackle for Taylor Decker. He's undrafted, so your backups maybe are guys that have been in the league, like Dan, for 13 years. But, like, the Minnesota Vikings, like, they're first or second-round starters. And so that means something. And like, you know, we all question Brad Holmes drafting, like, oh, he went and got this guy and this guy and Penei Sewell, and, like, he was onto something. Because if you walk in the Lions building, do you know who they will tell you is the most athletic player, offense, defense, special teams, in their building? Penei Sewell.
I mean,
I'm on the field like last week covering them, and, you know, I'm sitting laughing with some of the personnel, from the Lions, and they're like, you know who the most athletic guy on our team is? Penei Sewell. You should see him at practice. He could throw the ball. Like, we need to run a play for him to throw the ball.
And they ran
one.
They tried to.
They did.
I wonder if he'll complete a pass in this game. Oh, don't start.
Don't.
Ben Johnson insulted the Bears by even attempting that pass. But
correct.
Penei Sewell, pretty good.
Yeah, and well, when I hear from within their building, he is the most athletic player on our roster. And you got Aiden Hutchinson over there on the defensive side, and you've got, like,
anyone.
Thank you.
Really, yeah. Wow.
Like, so that's, like, to me, like, again, going back to these lines, like, it has to start there at this point in the NFL. This is a passing league. Like, you can't have a center competition in training camp anymore. Your center has to be an all-pro for your rookie quarterback. It's got to have the potential of being an all-pro. Like, that's just the way I think, because nowadays the pass rush is too good. Like, what Brian Flores is going to bring, he causes so much confusion, and it's just such a query to deal with him. Like, it adds another layer to how you game plan. And then I go back to, like, listening to Dan Campbell this week. You got Mully, you mentioned, or Ruthie, you mentioned the going for it on fourth down. They scored on 2 fourth down calls last Thursday, okay? Detroit, against the Packers, who are a pretty good team. Dan Campbell said this week, like, I had to call it. Like, I just trust those guys. I trust my offensive line. When you can have the ability to trust the guys that make it all happen, like, I mean, Jared Goff is phenomenal this season. Like, he's having an MVP year. Like, he's thrown 25-plus touchdowns in each of his last three seasons. I think he might be the first quarterback to do that, but I would have to double-check. They trust their offensive line so inherently that that layer of confidence allows them to do what they did against the Packers and win by three on a field goal. Like, I to me, it all starts there, and I think that's what has to be addressed for the Bears this offseason, with all due respect to the current linemen they have. But, I would definitely want to add there early in this coming draft.
Stacey, Brian Flores obviously is a name that we've talked a lot about having Caleb Williams having to face as a defensive coordinator, but he could potentially be a major head coaching candidate this offseason. I know there's a lot of complications with the lawsuits and everything going on there, but I know you've gotten to cover the Vikings and Brian and maybe get to know him a bit. What can you share with us about what he could bring as a head coach in his second go around at it?
Yeah, well, Ruthie is an incredible defensive mind. I have no doubt he'll get another shot at some point, but I don't know if the Vikings are willing to let him go this quickly. I mean, what he's built in a couple seasons there and the way the defense has responded, they went out and grabbed like a bunch of free agents in the offseason this year and really put together. When you think about Van Ginkle and you think about Jonathan Grenard and even Steph Gilmore and just the way they put that thing together with Flores. And the big takeaway in talking to all their players is just how attuned he is to what they want to do and like how he communicates with those guys. Like they have conversations just like in terms of, I remember talking to Grenard this season a couple times and just like how much Flores communicates with them what they want to do. And I'll never forget, he wants to be basically like when I was in London with them, and just really anytime I've covered them all season, like he wants to be the one like he wants to, at the end of a game, the final play, he wants it to come down to his defense, like the pen in his hand kind of thing. And that is the mentality that defense takes. And it's not been surprising to see the attitude that they've taken on with him. And I think you're seeing something very similar with Aaron Glenn in Detroit. A lot of these defenses taking the attitude and the sort of personification of their defensive coordinator. You know, when you hear Aaron Glenn talk about, it's not necessarily the playbook, it's the play style. So we can have a bunch of new guys because we're so injured, but are they able to pick up on the play style of what I'm looking for? I'll give you four plays. Like, let's scrap seven or eight. I'll give you four. Go out and do those well with the play style that who we are in Detroit, kneecap kind of play style. And let's see where the chips fall. And so it's really cool, and I think that's leadership, and I think a lot of teams are going to look at those traits and coaches like that, like those.
Yeah, I think I expected them to take more of a step back without Kirk Cousins, but I honestly thought Danielle Hunter was the more indispensable player. And the fact that neither side of the ball seems really impacted by some of the players that are gone, it just surprises you. It just tells you some people know what they're doing. Yeah. Simple
as
that.
And it's really the ability to lead, Molly. You know, look at the Rams, right? The Rams are surging as we've seen at this stage. I mean, they're
that's going to be a great game. Yeah, the Rams against the Niners, another one with playoff.
Injuries. It is. Yeah. Like the Rams are right now just peeking in at 7-6, right? Mm-hmm. But Matthew Stafford's there and Sean McVay's there. So you believe. And they got all their weapons back. And, you know, if they can get some stops defensively, they can get into this thing. I mean, coaching matters. Like Kevin O'Connell is really exceptional. And I just like last year, in his first season, they won all those close games. And then last year they lost a few. Like he is, I don't know how to describe, like when you sit in a production meeting with him, he's so methodical and he's such a player's coach. He's not a screamer or a yeller, but he's so attuned to the quarterback position. But then he has this incredible overarching pulse on the entire operation. And, you know, you see it, and then he delegates. Like, I think when I look at the Bears this year, I wonder if they had have gotten the offensive coordinator right from the start. Like, what if it was Thomas and he had had the entire season?
Yeah.
And you don't have to worry about that side of the football. Now, Kevin worries about it because he's the offensive play caller.
Right.
But if it's the other way around and you have a defensive-minded head coach, like, look at the Steelers with Mike Tomlin, right? Like, he doesn't have to worry about Arthur Smith on the other side necessarily. I mean, he's going to always say, I want to run the ball and I want to be, you know, grind it out, pound it out kind of offense. But they're throwing it now because they've got a quarterback and a play caller who can do those things. And so he has less to worry about as kind of a great defensive mind. And I wonder how things would have been different for the Bears, you know, had they maybe gotten an offensive coordinator to start that was a little bit more sure of the direction he wanted to go, because that's what we learned about Chief.
It's a great point, Stacey. No question about that. Thank you. Great catching up. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Stacey.
You got it, guys. Have a good one.
You have a great weekend. That is Stacey Dales. Does a great job with the NFL Network. We got Fred Mitchell coming into the studio to give out the Mitchell Award. The great
so
man
exciting.
Himself. Yeah, he's fun to talk to Fred always. It's Mully and Haw, Ruthie Polinsky in here, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Ruthie Polinsky, kind enough to sit in for David today. We've been having fun for a couple of days, and what an honor. The great man himself, Fred Mitchell, has deemed it appropriate to come and share with us the Mitchell Award winner, Fred, one of the all-time great kickers. He's the man who invented the 50-yard field goal, as I recall back in the day, as he lied to me at one point. Fred, how are you? Great to see you, buddy.
Great to see you, Molly and Ruthie. And this has turned into an annual ritual for us to make this important announcement. So I appreciate that always. But the suspense, Gabe Panikowski of Idaho State is the 2024 winner of the Fred Mitchell Award among an exceptionally strong field of candidates. Gabe is a junior and only the fourth underclassman to win our award.
Wow.
He was perfect on field goals, making 15 of 15, including a 55-yarder and a 51-yarder, and he had a walk-off game winner against Cal Poly. He had touchbacks on two-thirds of his kickoffs, so he's got a very, very strong leg. Gabe will be honored on February 17th during the National Football Foundation ceremony at Hallis Hall, and tickets will be available at Eventbrite. And the local runner-up for the award this year was a local guy, a sophomore from the College of DuPage, Junior College, Christian Casillas. And by the way, College of DuPage won its fourth straight national junior college championships last Saturday in Glen Ellen. And Casillas tied a national junior college record with a 62-yard field goal this season.
Holy cow.
And so he has a great future, and we should be hearing a lot about him at a four-year institution soon. So thanks to our co-chairman for our selection committee, Rob Perry, and Matt Katigula, who took over the co-chairmanship role this year, for their diligent work in helping to determine the winner among over 750 eligible non-FBS schools. That includes FCS, Division II, Division III, NAIA, and community colleges. And thanks to longtime chapter chairman Chris Carney for his overall support and guidance for the 37-man selection committee. The award recognizes exceptional community service as well as kicking performance. And this is the 15th year of the award, and I'm humbled to be the namesake of the award. And more information is available on FredMitchellAward.com.
Excellent. That's great. And this kid, he's going to be in the portal, right? Is that what you
Yes, I talked to him a couple days ago, and He has entered the transfer portal and has great confidence in himself and realizes, like a lot of other outstanding small college kickers that, you know, if you can get a bigger audience to recognize your skills and ability, the better chance you are to get an opportunity in professional football. And we've had a couple guys do that. Cole Tracy went to a Division II school and won our award, Assumption College out east. And he had a year of eligibility as a graduate student, went to LSU, and ended up being a Lou Groza Award for the major colleges. Had a fantastic season. And so he went from kicking in front of 3,000 or 4,000 to 100,000 at LSU.
Wow.
And it just, you know, shows what we talk about all the time, that kicking is kicking regardless. It's just a matter of how big an audience you have watching you.
It's so cool. You took the words out of my mouth, because I think it's so interesting to, with this position in particular, how it translates. Your leg is your leg, right?
Yeah.
So it is cool to see kind of this recognition at this level, and to see kind of how they're able to go on and further their career in front of these audiences, as you mentioned. What is it about, you know, getting to participate in this award and allowing to have people learn these names and give them the audiences to grow? Like, what does it mean to you to be a part of that?
It means an awful lot. And I know that, you know, it's nice to get awards, which I've, you know, been blessed to get, but it feels better for me to give the awards and have this be a part of my legacy. And, you know, I know firsthand what it's like to not get the attention that you deserve for these accomplishments that these young men have. So I'm blessed to have the opportunity to do that.
What? Tell us about the transition that's going on in kicking. I mean, look at the Bears and look at the NFL and the number of 50-yard field goals and just the seemingly endless distance that these guys can kick from. You know, I mean, we were arguing about a 48-yard field goal. Should they have gotten more yards? Oh, he was fine. He was at a spot. What was the Buffalo? It was like a
47 on grass. Yeah.
I mean, you think about that. That's like a chip shot these days.
Right.
It's insane how much better kickers have gotten and how different it is than it used to be.
Yeah. There are a lot of factors. First of all, you know, the soccer style method is much better than the straight on method that I tried to deploy. And, you know, we all thought that was a fad back in the 60s and it was going to go away. We were wrong about that. So there are no more straight on kickers. But so you've got that factor. You've got you've got all these kicking camps, which I'd have loved to have had when I was growing up,
right,
to go to, where you get somebody, you know, who knows what they're talking about to help you out. Another factor is that you've got indoor stadiums now and pristine surfaces to kick off a carpet as opposed to a muddy field that we often had to do.
And that controls the wind, too, if you're indoors, obviously.
Sure, sure. Right? And another thing that a lot of people don't talk about is that the hash marks now are just the width of the goalposts. So you don't really have any huge angles to navigate. So back in the day, they were out like 12 yards further out.
Oh, wow.
So you could have a short attempt from 30 yards or something like that, but you'd have an angle to negotiate. So those are just a couple of factors. And there's obviously much more time spent on special teams. You've got designated long snappers and holders who spend a lot of time with you. All those things combine. There's just some insane results now. All the 60-yarders,
unbelievable.
It's crazy.
And they're only going to get longer, right? Because at a certain point, if the opponent is kicking 60-yard field goals, your team's going to need to have a player that can kick the 60-yard field goals too.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's a prerequisite, and that's what makes kicking job so vulnerable. For when a guy misses two or three kicks in a row, he's out of there, and they bring in somebody else. And there's no real tolerance for that position compared to the other positions that you see. If a receiver drops a couple of passes, it doesn't mean he's going to get cut necessarily.
I wonder when that big argument came up about letting the 33 seconds go or 35, so whatever it was, I forget. Were you thinking as a kicker, get closer, get closer?
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, come on.
Yeah. I mean, you're just improving the odds considerably. I think it was going to be a 46, 47 yard.
Yes.
And to have that time available, if push it up 2-3 yards, it makes a big, big difference for a kicker.
And I believe that kicker is 40, what is he, 70 of 70 from 40 yards in.
Right.
So, I mean, yeah, get 6 yards and you're assured of it,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, just, you know, the strategies and strategizing of NFL coaches is kind of similar to NBA coaches into being able to utilize timeouts at the end of a game and to, you know, to know in basketball how to get the ball to half court, all these things that go through a coach's mind, and you take your time out and talk about possibilities. This is what an NFL coach has to go through. Now, how many games are decided by field goals at the end?
Right? Oh my God!
Right. Yeah. At the end of the Lions game, I think there was an effort from the Bears to not have to have their kicker sprint onto. They wanted to save that timeout so that the kicking team would have time to be able to get out onto the field. Right? They wanted that, and then everything.
Yeah.
Broke loose, but
yeah. And the coach got fired.
Thanks, Molly, for the reminder. So, why is that? So, you know, to give that kicker sort of that emotional and physical sort of moment to take a breath, you know, how crucial is that and how big of a game changer can that be? You know, when I know the intention of what Matt Eberflus was trying to do there was correct, it just wasn't executed.
Yeah,
right. Well, first of all, you know, this is something that special teams have always practiced,
mm-hmm.
even when I was kicking.
Right.
Okay, last minute situation, right out on the field. I remember my coach would stand behind me in practice when we were working on that, and then he'd be counting that 10, 9, 8, then he'd throw a handkerchief or something in front of me to try to distract me. So these are things that special teams coaches and head coaches practice. So they should be prepared for that. And I don't know if the other team had a timeout left or not, but often you see the kicker, you know, I'm trying to freeze him, right?
Sure.
Oh, yeah, he's you're always doing that. Yeah.
Love that. I love when that happens.
Yeah.
When you, I was going to ask real quick about Cairo Santos for the Bears. We had so many conversations about the low trajectory, you know, after he had a couple of those kicks blocked. Is that sort of what you were talking about with the soccer versus the straight line and sort of how you creating that arc.
Right. Yeah. So when we straight on kickers kicked, we would get 7 yards behind the line of scrimmage because we were able to get the ball elevated quicker. And so you'll notice that now with the soccer style kickers, they get back 8 yards to account for the lower trajectory. And particularly for longer kicks, you know, like 47 yards or whatever, the soccer style kickers have to drive the ball even lower to get the distance that they get. So that's another reason why it's important to get as close as possible so you could alleviate that possibility of getting blocked.
Fred, we'll let you go. I'm just curious. You've spent half your life covering coaching changes. What kind of coach do you want to see the Bears hire?
Mm.
There doesn't seem to be a college guy. Do you think they need an offensive guy? Do you think they need one of these, I don't know, Brian Flores has been mentioned, Mike Vrabel has been mentioned, kind of a guy to come in and give him a little discipline.
Mm-hmm.
What's your preference?
Yeah, you know, it's easy.
Trade for Shanahan?
It's easy to say, but you want a coach that the players respect and will give everything they've got to try to impress. Lovie Smith was that guy for the Bears, the last guy for the Bears to be able to do that. Or you, particularly the defensive players, it seemed like they wanted to perform well for him. So whoever they bring in has to be somebody that the players respect and that who holds the players accountable, obviously, and knows clock management, which we've talked about already. So many games come down to the end.
Yeah.
Right? So you want somebody who can handle that kind of pressure.
Great stuff. That's Fred Mitchell joining us. Thank you, Fred.
A lot of fun. Great to meet you, Fred.
My pleasure,
and,
Ruthie.
And Ruthie Polinsky's been in here all week. Ruthie, thank you. Right now, we're going to give something away. You be the sixth caller to the Scores contest line. The contest line, 312-540-0670. And you will get a pair of tickets on the 100 level to see the Bulls-Hornets game at the United Center this Friday. That is a great giveaway. 312-540-0670. Get a pair of tickets on the 100 level, and maybe Benny the Bull will dump popcorn on you. That's a gift. It's Mully and Haw. Ruthie is in for David on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.